Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left in Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How are you?
I'm well this morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I now proud once again to play our theme song.
Green onions have been cleared from the controversy.
Green onions have been cleared of all wrongdoing in the Taco Bell controversy.
Green onions, 15 EMGs, has never made anyone sick.
Yeah, they have been cleared, though, so green onions are fair game once again.
Is the holiday time of year. Want to talk about in the level of gifts I do not want for Christmas. A trend you started in the last show. Flying high for those who are tired of mixing your own martinis, whoever you are, Mystique Brands has come up with the Metropolitan Martinis ready-mixed packaged in a long acrylic tube, martini glasses in the martini covered up like hospital jello. You just chill it, take it out of the refrigerator in the glass, 6.8 ounces and 40 proof. They're 50% larger than the traditional cocktail. It's $11.99 to $13.99 for two glasses. Buy Right Wine Cellar and some ShopRite stores.
Very nice. Remember, we've asked you all to send us your great ideas for what not to get us for the holidays this year. This one from our own Mike Pavlichko.
Let me rewrite this. For those who are too tired of mixing your own martinis, you shouldn't be drinking martinis. You can't muster the energy to mix your own martini.
Let me help you.
It's not a martini. I'm looking at these red and blue things.
Off you go.
Yeah, no, it's put the stuff in ice, shake it up. Terrible. Recipe for a terrible martini. It's the hospital food of martinis. I'm looking forward to that. Okay, also on the food blogs, because in my spare time, after running two restaurants and a radio show, I search the food blogs at night. There's quite a row and quite a debate going on in the blogosphere.
A row.
Row.
Thank you.
The Graydon Carter's restaurant, the Waverly Inn. Graydon Carter's the editor of Vanity Fair, and he opened kind of a high-end, like shabby chic kind of restaurant, is how I would describe it. You know, it's sort of homey for rich people, slumming sort of, right? Anyway, the restaurant's not crazy expensive, and it's got a lot of press. Well, because it's owned by Graydon Carter, who's the editor in chief of Vanity Fair, or the publisher of Vanity Fair.
Vanity Fair writes about it all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's the deal. They had mac and cheese on the menu, and in sort of their uptown goes downtown way, they decided to have the specialty mac and cheese, macaroni and cheese with fresh shaved truffles.
For those of you who've never had something like mac and cheese with fresh grated truffles, it's really, really good.
By the way, it's something that works, by the way. Mm. Now, you know, there's this whole idea of combining the high and the low, the familiar comfort food of macaroni and cheese, with truffles, which are going for about $1,500 a pound. Now, a lot of people are saying, oh, why would you ruin truffles with a mac and cheese? Truffles and mac and cheese?
Is delicious.
Awesome.
They realize that one of the things about truffles and one of the great things that go with truffles, the things that go best with truffles, are generally something simple, something that will let those other flavors of the truffles really show themselves.
So here's the controversy. The guy orders truffles, he orders macaroni and cheese, the Monday special with fresh shaved truffles. The bill comes, $55. Okay, two things. One, and they evidently shaved truffles on the mac and cheese in front of them.
In front of them.
Okay, so here's the thing. You go in, you don't know what truffles are, you order mac and cheese, you get $55 for your mac and cheese. What a ripoff!
Yikes.
But if you get anything with truffles on it for $55, what a steal!
With fresh truffles, exactly.
So the guy is really angry, and there's a lot of debate in the blogosphere, and here's what it comes down to. The price should be on there, you know? And
there should be some sort of, whether it's by the gram, and a lot of places these days charging for their truffles by the gram. Okay, the truffle comes out on a scale. You weigh it before you shave it, and you weigh it after you shave it, and you get charged by the gram.
But that's not what they did here. It was just $55 mm-hmm. for it. But you can't have daily specials where, like, Tuesday's daily special is $9.99.
Tuesday's daily special is the mac and cheese with bacon,
right?
And that's $8.95. And Friday's special is the mac and cheese with truffles, and that's $58.95.
Right. Now, that's a good price for truffles. It's probably not making any money on the dish, honestly. The other thing the guy said is he says in the blog, he's now known as Mac and Cheese Guy. Mac and Cheese Guy in the blog says he saw them shave something in front of him, but he just thought it was freshly grated cheese. Okay, listen, a truffle smells from a mile away.
Right.
Okay, and you love it or you hate it, but it smells from a mile away. And he talks about how he's a sophisticated diner. If you don't notice the truffles under your nose, you don't win as sophisticated diner. But I agree with the guy. You charge $55 for something.
You gotta have a price out there. The other reason you have to have the price out there, even if you say truffles, there needs to be some accommodation for the guest that the price is there, because so many people are saying truffles and using truffle oil,
which is cheap.
Which is, you know, $16-$20 for a 250-milliliter bottle. So many people out there are using truffle shavings, which are considerably cheaper than truffles. So many people out there are using all these other – some people are using synthetic truffle oil, mm-hmm. which, you know, isn't even real truffle oil.
Mm-hmm.
So – and using the word truffle. So there needs to be some accommodation of price, which, by the way, when you tell me $55, I expect real truffles.
Now let's get off our truffle high horse for a minute. I think this goes with contemporary dining. I think it's important to let the guests know the price, especially of the specials. We both, when we started in the mm-hmm. business, the old trick of like, oh, and the special tonight is the veal scallopini, and, you know, the special would be twice the price of what an entree is, and they would never tell you the price, as if it was rude, if it were mm-hmm. rude to mention the price.
It's not rude.
It's not rude to mention the price, especially in a casual environment. And in Stage Left, which is our high-end restaurant, we get around mentioning the price. Because when we tell you the specials, we put a little card on the table
mm-hmm.
that has the price of the specials on it. Now, if you choose not to look at that card and you are surprised by the price of something, then we've
right.
Done
every once in a while that'll happen, and I'll feel badly about that. But truly, I've worked hard to provide you with the prices for each item.
Well, and the idea again is nobody wants to get suckered. I don't want you mm-hmm. to be surprised by anything. But at the same token, I think some people don't want the prices talked about. And often when we work with the wine list with someone, we'll be standing behind someone and they'll ask us for a recommendation on wine. Now listen, we have wines on our list that are $29. We have wines on our list that are $1,600. And you say, make me a recommendation, something really nice. Okay, I'm in dangerous waters here.
Right.
What I'll often do, or our sommeliers, the captains will often do, is say, well, you know, what were you thinking about? What are you having for dinner, first of all? And then, are you thinking about something along these lines? Or tell me something you've had before. And you can, if you don't want to say the price and point your sommelier in the right direction, say, well, you know, I've had something like this before and I like it. Even if you hadn't, and if you're pointing at the price line, I know what you're talking mm-hmm. about. But you
and realize that there are some very, very sophisticated diners who say, I want a nice bottle of wine, and that means a $35 or $40 bottle of wine.
Absolutely.
And there are some very, very sophisticated diners.
Or in some restaurants, a $20 bottle of wine.
And there are very sophisticated diners who say, I want a nice bottle of wine, and it means a $1,000 bottle of wine.
And I also...
So there needs to be some communication there.
And in this day and age, I think it's perfectly all right to say, yeah, I'd like a nice bottle of wine, you know, something in the $30 range.
Yep.
But be very, very careful, our unscrupulous restaurateurs. And for you restaurateurs out there, you got to let your customers know the price. We'll be back in just a moment talking with James and Kay Salter about their new book, Life is Meals. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. James Salter, of course, is the author of the marvelous novel A Sport and a Pastime and eight other books. He won the Penn Faulkner Award in 1989, and he's, to our minds, one of the best writers writing today. Kay Salter has written for The New York Times and dear to our heart, Food and Wine magazine. She's also a playwright, and together they've written Life is Meals, a food lover's book of days, which has been called a beautifully written tour de table. We agree with that assessment.
James and Kay Salter, thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the show.
James and Kay. Do we have James and Kay on the line? We're not getting him.
We have.
Oh. We've lost them. Well, there's been a terrible tragedy in Long Island where James and Kay Salter have been hit by a meteorite. No, that really hasn't happened. Hopefully we'll get them back on the line. Anyway, they wrote this wonderful book called Life is Meals. They were there just until the moment we lost them. Life is Meals is a book.
Isn't everyone always there just until you lose them?
Yeah, well, we're on the phone with them. Anyway, it's a book of days, which is different. It's not a cookbook. It's not it's not a technical manual. It's just a collection of thoughts. Do we have him back on the line? James and Kay, welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Oh, nice to have you. I'm glad it worked this time. We thought you'd been hit by a meteorite or something.
Right. Well, on a beautiful spring morning, anything can happen,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's true. We know that all too sadly. You know, your book opens with a quote from Alexander Dumas, and that quote is, "I intend that my last work shall be a cookbook composed of memories and desires." And then later in the book, you talk about how Dumas actually went off and wrote that cookbook and died shortly thereafter. You guys are okay, right?
Well, my wife is a lot younger than I am.
Well, we've been cooking together for decades, so we've accumulated enough experience to launch on this anyway.
Well, we'd like you guys to stick around. So
yeah. So now, what after all that you've written, what turned your thoughts to write a book sort of centered on meals and food?
Well, we talk a lot about food. Actually, we sit down together at breakfast in the morning, and we sort of plan out the menu for the day, more or less. After a dinner party, we like to have a debriefing and dissect what happened, what food worked, who was interesting, who should come back, and so forth. So it's something that's sort of integrated into our daily life all the time.
Francis and I
don't want you to get the idea that we're sort of roly-poly retired people or anything.
No, we have the picture of you in the back of the book. You both look very fit.
And by the way, Francis and I do exactly the same thing every day, and we're not even married.
Yeah. Well, and we own restaurants. We charge people for the privilege of, and they can all come back as long as they pay the tab, which is one of the things you talk about in the book. I think before we talk about specifics, because I try to describe to people what this book is. It's a collection of thoughts. It's a collection of notes and anecdotes. How would you describe for our listeners what this book is?
Well, I would say for those listeners who have children, save college tuition. Give him a copy of this book instead.
Actually, our son, who was just about to graduate from college, was almost a neighbor of yours for his four prep school years at Lawrenceville.
Sure.
And that's when he first got interested in cooking, and it's a book that appeals sort of across the age spectrum. Anybody who's interested in meals other than as a fueling opportunity, I think we'll find things in it that are exciting and interesting for us.
So the book is actually a book of hours, but it's days rather than hours. And for every day, there's something that you might think about, something you might find very interesting.
You know, your book...
Drinking, cooking, food, wine, whatever.
The book was brought to my attention and turned on to me by a friend of mine who's a writer who also lives out in Long Island, a guy named Kurt Wenzel, who wrote Lit Life several years ago.
Yes.
He and I and Mark have been friends since college, and we often talk about how we sort of mark the milestones of our lives with different great meals. And I think your book has a lot to talk about marking time and marking seasons, doesn't it?
There's definitely that in the book. The book's organized around seasonal things and around specific holidays and so forth. But I think for us, some of the most memorable meals have been those not particularly associated with a big date. I mean, you never know exactly when one of those is going to happen. But although birthdays, the interesting thing is people who look at this book turn first to their birthday to see what happened to have fallen on that day. And I think birthdays are a big deal for us.
But coming at it from a slightly different way, so many important things. Every important event in life is usually marked by a meal. Funerals, marriages, birthdays, and so forth. Every human ceremony, as a matter of fact. So if you think back, just as you said a moment ago, you often connect things chronologically with meals, and your memories are hung often around meals, and some of the most important things in your life happened at the table one way or another. So with all that in mind, and having talked about this and read about it and made notes about it and jotted things down, you may notice in the book we talked about a dining book that we kept for years, kind of an annals of dinners, where it began very simply. We didn't want to serve the same thing twice to friends, but then we began to enlarge it a little bit and to talk about whether what it turned out well, what didn't, and who drank too much and who didn't, and who said this, and what astonishing things happened at the dinner, if any. And from that book, in part, we got the idea of writing this.
I can only think that if I have friends who keep as good records as you do, that I'm on that drank too much list a little too often, and I hope my parents never see it. We'll come back in just a moment. We'll be talking with James and Kay Salter about their book, Life is Meals, A Food Lover's Book of Days. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The Restaurant Guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the Restaurant Guys restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices, right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see, you need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the Restaurant Guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. We're talking with James and Kay Salter about their wonderful book, Life is Meals, A Food Lover's Book of Days.
You know, James and Kay, this book offers a lot of great advice, and we'll talk about some of that great advice later in the show. But for right now, you know, one of the things that I think Francis and I allude to all the time, whether we discuss it directly or not, is that life is about moments. And there are moments in your life that happen, and those are where your memories come from, and those are where your perception of how your life is going come from. And so many of these moments happen around meals, and it almost feels like parts of this are kind of a diary of those moments. Is that what you were looking for?
Well, I think that's definitely part of it. That's a very accurate description, I think, of daily life, of the accumulation of days over a long life. So we were definitely looking for that kind of tone.
But that's part of it, of course. But, I mean, the book is not entirely personal. It's not just come and have dinner with us kind of thing. I mean, it's much broader than that.
Right. There are historical meals and literary meals and the histories of foods and odd little facts like how the candy cane was invented and what's the difference between Chinese and Japanese chopsticks. And each one is meant to be something interesting and slightly unexpected, I think.
Well, the book is a really wonderful collection of little surprises, and it is really a book of days in that you go through it and you find, like, little presents as you go. And I reckon it's a great Christmas present to bring to someone. It's a very thoughtful one. You can find out about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. After the news, we're going to talk about food and culture and food rituals in culture with James and Case Salter about their new book that's just been released, Life is Meals, A Food Lover's Book of Days. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450. WCTC with The Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
We're talking today with James and Kay Salter about their book, Life is Meals, A Food Lover's Book of Days. You know, one of the nice things about this book is you can sort of drop in at any point and find interesting facts and thoughts and ruminations. That's a nice way to go with this book, James and Gay.
Read one of them to you.
I'm sorry.
So would you let me read one of them to you?
Please. I would love it.
That would be the best.
As an example, I mean, it's not all about you know, how to give dinner parties or anything. Here's one on the 21st of June, and it's about Learned Hand, known as the greatest American judge, never to serve on the Supreme Court, and admired for his many often cited decisions. He once gave a description of what would be for him a perfect day. A soft summer day in June would begin with a walk in the garden with his wife, and much later, after a number of other events, a nap with her, and cocktails with all the friends they have valued throughout life. Crowning it all would be a magnificent dinner, and afterward, conversation with the most brilliant and glorious figures in history, the climax of which would be Marcus Aurelius turning to Voltaire and saying, "Oh, shut up. I want to hear what Learned Hand has to say."
With the very slight alteration, that could be my perfect day as well. And I'll leave that to the listeners' imaginations to figure that out. But, you know, but the great variety of different snippets and pages here, each assigned a different day of the year, is tremendous. And there is some useful information, actually. You talk there's a part where you talk about rice and the value of rice and sake and how in Japanese culture you would never at someone's table pour your own sake. Someone else will do it for you. I think the cultural observations of people at table are very interesting.
And cross-cultural observations.
Do you find that to be a source of richness?
It is, partly because we love to travel, and not that we've traveled the world, but it's always stimulating and illuminating, gives you a new perspective to be in a different place. So some of those cultural references have to do with that. It's just a reminder that all of these sort of traditions have evolved over time, and we have our own that we're probably not even aware of most of the time because they're so automatic.
You know, I was traveling in Ireland I have relatives there, so I go often. I was with a friend who we were sitting around a table, and I realized one there that I hadn't even thought of. In Ireland, you would never, if you're sitting at someone's table and there's a bottle of whiskey on the table, that person will pour you whiskey when you run out, much like the sake you talk of. In America, we'll just, you know, grab the bottle and pour for yourself. And my friend sort of grabbed the bottle and poured herself some whiskey, and people sort of looked at each other around the table, and I sort of knew what happened.
One little gasp.
I think that's you know, interesting to observe those differences and notions of graciousness. You talk in your book about gift giving, the hostess gift. Do you want to tell us your thoughts on that?
Well, depends partly on the culture. A great friend of ours who lived in Paris for a long time said that they always bring a hostess gift, but it should never be anything that has to do with anything that's going to be consumed for the evening, because they assume the hostess has spent a great deal of time figuring all of that out and doesn't want it to be disrupted. So as a result, what they always do is bring flowers. So instead, the hostess is scurrying around looking for odd things to put the 7 bouquets of flowers in. It presents its own problems.
We had an etiquette expert on once who said, if you bring a hostess gift, you should never bring, like you said, you should never bring wine or candy or anything that you expect to consume that evening. You should bring the flowers that you helped the hostess put into the vase that you have also brought.
What I think, though, as I read through that, I realized your friends probably serve you better wine than my friends serve.
Sometimes it, and they like the gift, so it works out okay.
We cook and entertain for pleasure. This is not an elevated sort of table with crystal and white linen all the time. It's the real joy is having people to share a meal with you who you love to see and talk to. That's our motto is, as we quote in the book, someone else. It's more important what's on the chairs than what's on the table.
Well, and I also really like the allusion there that you're not every day is fine crystal day. There are some days you want your friends over just to have a meal and sit around and chat about the day's events, and sometimes you want to celebrate a holiday or a birthday.
Absolutely.
Well, you also deal with... I'm sorry, go ahead, James.
Yeah, that tells you what to do And actually, in cases where people either come too early or come too late or come on the wrong day or one thing or another, I forget which day it is.
Yeah.
It's not, this is not a book of triumphs. Here's one on, here's one from 2002. It's called Disaster. This is actually one of our own parties. It says, dinner party was a complete disaster. Everything from beginning to end. The food was bad. There were too many people. The presentation was chaotic. We broke two fundamental rules. One, serving two things we'd never made before. And two, having too much that had to be prepared at the last minute. The carrots and ginger were burned. The gratin of potatoes had too much cream and was undercooked. The elaborate baked meat turned out to be crumbly, more like a shepherd's pie, on and on. We sat on the couch together after everyone had gone, reflecting on what had gone wrong, rather than facing the piles of dishes and debris. The only good thing was that there had been a lot of drinking. They might not remember clearly. Everyone called the next day. Fabulous party.
That reminds me of a party I once had with my friend Corey Malice, who's worked for a wine importer, and she was meeting a bunch of Austrian winemakers. They were supposed to come to the restaurant for dinner, and they were supposed to arrive at 6 o'clock, and their plane was delayed, and they weren't getting in until midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, which was too late to find a place to have dinner. And so I grabbed a couple of rabbits from the restaurant and went back to my apartment, and I put them in the oven. And by the time they walked in at 1 o'clock in the morning, famished from their delayed flight and on a holdover, the fire was going, and they came in, and they had started drinking on the plane, and I had started drinking while I was making their dinner. And everything seemed to work out well, except that it seemed that there wasn't...
That's definitely a meal they'll never forget.
Well, actually, they did forget part of it.
I think they named the meal Drunken Rabbit.
They did forget part of the meal. They remembered that it was good, though. But it seemed that there wasn't enough meat, though we had two rabbits and a couple of birds. And I realized why when I opened the stove a couple of days later and realized I had left some of the rabbit in the oven. We all had a great time, though. But it's all about the people, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes, definitely.
You discuss in your book... who to invite back, who never to invite back together. What is the delicate diplomacy of the people at a party, and whom do you say, okay, never again? What gets you not invited back to a Salter dinner party?
Oh, no. The question is really which people shouldn't be invited together.
There's
combining.
Somebody who disqualifies themselves, but we may not want them at the table with certain other people because... It's too incendiary.
Give us an example.
That's why people stopped inviting Francis and I to the same dinner table. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, they just turned on the radio from 11 to 12 and they had enough. But what kind of people would you want to, what kind of things do you seek to avoid when putting a guest list together?
Well, we're trying not to have, say, ex-wives and husbands who are on bad terms with each other, that kind of thing.
That's a big one.
Or a critic who has panned something written by somebody who else is going to be at the table.
I could see how that could be a little difficult.
Yes. It's the more obvious conflicts. And sometimes we try to avoid people who are very, very politically outspoken. We don't have with people who are also that way, but on the other side of every question.
Well,
so,
I think constructively, you certainly don't want two people at the table, both of whom talk constantly and dominate the entire table. Because then it's just it's terrible.
Well, then it's an audience rather than a conversation. I've been at such events.
So you've got to kind of balance it out. Well, I'm sure you have. Don't you have the same sort of situation who sits at which table in the restaurant?
That's an interesting point. We'll get into that in a second because we occasionally do have communal seating, but usually it's just as long as they pay the bill, they can bore each other to death if they want. That's all we care about as restaurateurs. But it's different in the home. We'll be back talking in just a moment more with James and Kay Salter about their book, Life is Meals, A Food Lover's Book of Days. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:46.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on Nine is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on Nine supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on Nine has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on Nine, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio. Central Jersey 1450. WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, stage left and Catherine Lombardi, and we're talking today with James and Kay Salter about their book, Life is Meals, A Food Lover's Book of Days.
You know, in this book, you write about a lot of famous people, people very important to the food industry, Julia Child, MFK Fisher, even Thomas Jefferson. But as a restaurant owner, I have to say the one little anecdote that caught my eye was on August 16th, you talk about corkage. And corkage is where you allow a restaurant allows someone to come in and open their own bottle of wine and bring their own bottle of wine in. And I guess what I should say to you is that at Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi, our restaurants, we actually don't allow corkage. But if everyone followed your rules of etiquette, we probably would.
Well, these were actually rules spelled out by a friend of ours who owns a restaurant. And it depends. I mean, they don't automatically grant that as a possibility, but These are the sort of guidelines if you're going to do it. Yes, because it's only fair to the restaurant, after all.
Why don't you tell us what those guidelines are?
I'm sorry?
Why don't you tell us what the guidelines are?
I have them right here in front of me if you'd like me to read them.
That would be great.
Okay. First, call ahead to check on the restaurant's policies. Don't bring a wine that's on the restaurant's list. Don't take advantage of a generous policy by bringing several bottles of a wine that would require fresh glasses, and don't bring multiple bottles for large parties. Try and order a wine from the list to supplement your own, and tip as though the cost of your own wine were part of the bill.
That seems perfectly civilized.
It seems perfectly civilized, I concur.
Yeah, we'd allow that to happen if anybody did that, but that doesn't happen a lot out here in Jersey.
Well, I'm sure people take advantage of it or don't, you know, just don't think it through. Don't think of the restaurant side of the question.
I honestly think that you're exactly right there. Most people just don't think it through.
Yeah, it's not that people, no one wants to be mean or rude. It's just that, you know, they don't think of the other side of things.
Exactly. You're the ones who have to wash the glasses, after all, and so forth. So.
Yeah, and if my waiter pours your Latour into your Lafitte, you're going to be mad at me. You know, so they should get compensated for that.
Right.
Now, you made an allusion before. Let's talk about some seasonal things.
There's definitely a Latour Lafitte joke there that I'm not going down.
You're not good enough to think of it, though. Let's talk about the origin of candy canes. When were candy canes invented? That was a great little anecdote.
Let me see. I'm just looking that up again.
I think you wrote that one.
Yes, I did. I was just reading it earlier. That's on... let me find it. Ask another question.
Okay. Well, less important than when they were invented, they were originally invented to keep the choir quiet, choir children quiet. Is that?
That's right. They were supposedly invented in Cologne, Germany, mm-hmm. And they were given to children to keep them occupied and quiet during the long Christmas services, and they made them in the shape of a shepherd's crook to go with the themes of Christmas. And at first they were just white peppermint, and they didn't get the candy cane look, the red coloring in it, until almost 200 years later when it was added, and that, of course, is how they're always done now.
Well, I think that the book is full of seasonal wonders, including your writings on Thanksgiving and Twelfth Night cake. And I have a question for you, though. Tell me about the role of champagne and champagne on New Year's Eve. Obligatory?
Well, it depends. I mean, Jim's not a big champagne drinker, so even though we have it for others, we may not always drink it ourselves. But it's a nice, great tradition, I think.
You know, there's that old adage that, we talk about this all the time at the restaurant, that people say, well, you should save champagne for a special occasion. And I always say, just opening a bottle of champagne makes it a special occasion.
Exactly.
That's my...
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's my philosophy on things. Yeah. Well, James and Kay, I want to thank you for being on the show and talking to us with you about your books.
It's been a true honor.
And
it's been a lot of fun.
It's a beautiful book, and we do recommend it to our listeners, and you can find out how to pick it up by going to our website at restaurantguysradio.com. Now, James, one final thing, though. You also you wrote the intro to A.J. Liebling's book, In Between Meals, right?
Yeah.
That was really pretty awesome. How did you come to write that very important intro?
Well, the publisher, Jack Shoemaker, asked me if I would write it. I was thrilled to write it. I must say, modesty aside, it's a pretty good introduction.
Yeah, it is to a pretty good book, I'll have to say.
To a fabulous book, and simply a marvelous writer.
Well, as are you, Mr. Salter. It's a pleasure to have you both on the show.
Thanks.
Thanks so much.
The book is Life is Meals, A Food Lover's Book of Days from James and Kay Salter. James Salter is one of the best living writers, in my opinion, on so many things, and now they've gotten together and written a book about food. And it's just a wonderful gift. You can pop into any page of it and really enjoy it. Perfect for the holidays. So you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Very sweet people, James and Kay Salter.
And, you know, one of the things that Francis and I were talking about off air when we did the news earlier was, you know, how interesting it is. You can pick this book up at any point, open it to any page, and just catch right on and find something interesting to read.
The writing in this book is, as you would expect from one of the greatest living writers, which is James
exactly.
Salter. And Kay Salter also, it's absolutely marvelous and beautiful, and it's more about writing than about food, but it's about life, and it's wonderful. They do have one little anecdote in there. They talk about the first restaurant opened in Paris, which was opened by a former steward to royalty. I actually knew this story, and it's just one of the days. It's about Antoine Beauvillier, who in 1728... opened the first restaurant, super high-class thing, very formal, first restaurant in Paris. And before that, there were inns where you could, you know, if you were staying at the inn, they would make you a meal. But Beauvillier, mm-hmm. he had a photographic memory. He remembered everyone's name, super high-class service. And when I say formal, they write in the book that Beauvillier used to carry a sword in the restaurant. I've often thought that would come in handy. Especially in my younger years, bartending at rougher places.
I was going to say, maybe in the early years, in the 80s in New Brunswick, when it was a more rough and tumble town than it is today.
You know, the other thing they read is we touched briefly on the hostess gift, and they say basically the true etiquette is you know, no wine, because you don't want people to expect to have to pour it that night. I think in America we don't really have that.
Especially, like I said, again, most of my friends serve crummy wine,
yeah.
so I'm bringing something good.
Well, and most of our friends look forward to the, like, Francis and Mark, no wine, and they pay wholesale. But no wine, no candy on the more formal end because, you know, your hostess has chosen the dessert for the evening.
I get a pedophore, though. Come on.
The flowers are often a choice, again, as long as you bring the vase and help to cut and put them in them. But as they say, higher on the social ladder, like on the super high, you don't, to the Duchess's house, you're not expected to bring a gift. You would look like a buffoon.
Because she's a Duchess.
Right. And I've never been
and
to
I'm
the Duchess's
a And I'm a buffoon.
Well, you know, it's funny because I come from a working class Irish Catholic household, and what the word there is, never show up with your arms dangling. The thing. Never show up with your arms
dangling. That's a big thing, or you're in big trouble.
If you show up, you got to have flowers, you got to have a bottle of wine, you got to have something. But if you're invited to someone's house, you never show up with your arms dangling. But, Mark, when you come over to my house, you can show up with your arms dangling. You don't need to bring anything.
Occasionally, I bring nothing.
Actually, you call me on the phone and say, stop by the restaurant.
Exactly. Almost like it, and that's true. The truest part of that is now that with the restaurants and everything, we always end up bringing something because someone calls up and says, I forgot ice. Ice and wine.
I hope you've enjoyed the last hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.